who was rebooted in the last Alien Romulus movie.
I did manage to see that one.
Did you like how Ian Holm was portrayed in that movie?
Well, he's kind of distant, remote. I don't know if they had an actual performance of his, but it seemed
it
maybe
was a CGI thing.
Synthesized,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was synthesized.
It sounded like him part of the time, but there was a reason that you couldn't get close to see him.
Right. Yeah, they had him on monitors and whatnot.
And he's always on some flickering screen.
Yeah, you'd have that analog, like, glitch, you know, like, oh, I think the porno is in there, or whatever, you know. But the, but Romulus had some nice, you know, artwork.
And, yes.
But it was kind of an uncomfortable movie to digest, like, on the whole. There's a few stuff that's like that, where it's just like, oh, you got the name, and you just, you know, you put a lot of money into it, and it's like there's some cool stuff there, but like it's hard to embrace. But that's the thing. It's like the Alien. Every time a new Alien movie was made, it seemed like there was with a different director. Like the director would have their own approach.
Yes, the third one was really jarring in that way. The David Fincher one.
Yeah, I like that one. It seemed like the James Cameron movies was like the least respectable one, even though it was the most audience pleasing movie.
Well, the full length version should be seen because they really cut it down to it's the least.
Well, you get to see the inhabitants, you know, like living their.
Well, yes,
family
but
life, you know, before
the main character has been in suspended animation, moving at random in space, preserved, but her own world is completely gone, and they put her in this space sanitarium. Now, this is only in the long version, where she seems to be surrounded by trees and flowers, but then they come in and turn a switch, and they all go away. You know, she's in this bleak examination room. Well, it's like a 3D holodeck type thing that they're doing, but
it's like a waiting room.
Yeah, and her daughter died years ago, and here's a picture of her, and she's old, dumpy, and middle-aged, and so on.
Right.
This is really, I mean, she crushes the spirit, and she's living in a thing that's like a cargo container or something when they come to recruit her for the mission. But then, through saving a little Newt and so on, bonding with her, it's like she does have her daughter back again in some strange way as a reward.
Yeah, yeah. Her
paternal
thing has kicked in full gear, yeah.
But David Fincher had the Newt gobbled up by an alien before the credits were done. Yeah.
Yeah, the cracking of the glass and the splatter of blood. Yep, that was Newt. Moving on.
At least she didn't have to be conscious when that happened.
Mostly.
She went into cryo sleep and never came out of it.
Right. Dreams of winning her second grade talent contest or.
You have to draw on that a little bit hard. It needs to be
get along, little doggy.
Loosened up in the middle.
I'm gonna get one more beer before our night is finished.
Sure.
Are you gonna wrap it up, or are you gonna go on?
I might go on a little. I'm not going over to the tattoo place tonight, but I hope to do that tomorrow night after a meeting that I have.
How are the young artists collective?
Well, they're doing good work over there, I think. Well, get a delicious, cold, frothing, foamy beer.
One more beer.
Oh, I suppose I should pay some attention to what time it is. Yes, I'm actually going on as in days of yore, and that's because I actually have people here to talk to instead of my own muttering monologue. I'm delighted that you visited.
I'm returning to the mic after a hiatus, a sojourn to the loo.
Yes, are you being disturbed by the...
from the noxious fumes of the
I see,
yeah, toxic weed.
I was going to ask you about that.
Huh? It's okay. I survived. It was a close nick. My interlocutors were interloping and eloping and I was being...
But surely you must have had the experience of being on a crowded bus full of cigarette smoke and so on.
I've been on the experience of being on a bus full of betel chewers, where the...
Oh, betel nuts.
Yeah, betel. I call it betel. Yeah. You can call it betel.
Okay, betel. You know,
tomato,
you know best.
Betel,
you know best.
Betel. Yeah, there were beetle chewers. That's a different thing. I've been on a bus full of grasshopper eaters, too, where they're selling the fried grasshoppers. The Kentucky Fried Grasshopper. Now, there's
good
a franchise
Lord
for you. Well, you know, in Kentucky, the grasshoppers, they hop higher than other places. They
it's
yodel,
nice and hot.
They yodel while they hop.
Red dirt, moisture, the fecundity.
The fecundity, yes, right. The profundity and the fecundity. It goes hand in hand. In the deep southern land. Well, I shouldn't really do that much rhyming now, should I? I should try to swear off of that.
Why?
Well, because rhyming is out of fashion. Did you know that I went to a poetry reading? I've been to two open mic poetry readings, and in both cases, they asked me to stop. They really don't like it. Why? And I think it is because the reason the poetry rhymes. They don't make rhyming poetry. I don't want to have a prejudice against poetry that doesn't rhyme. I think there's lots of fine poetry that doesn't bother to or doesn't use rhyme as its structure. But I tend to have sort of a predilection for poetry that actually is in verse and rhymes. I think that that's a...
Well, yes, me too. The rhyme is not necessary for a poem. It sometimes helps, and the reason I say so is that I subscribe to the Coleridgean idea that poetry is actually a kind of spell casting, and you need to pay attention to these details, and you need to be in a state which is poetic diction, language not in the way language is normally spoken or heard, but also of it. So it's an adjunct to things, and of course some things are tricky, just tricks, rhymes, tricks, internal rhymes. There are masculine rhymes and feminine rhymes.
And then there are Luciferian rhymes.
Oh, I haven't heard of those.
Well, I'm gonna read you a couple of Luciferian rhymes here.
Please do.
Rising beyond the sky, somber as a tombstone, the cathedral aspired to where angels do exist. climbing to be in range of God's mobile telephone, as it was in Babylon, blind faith does persist. The phone rang for ages, never going silent. Alas, they did surmise God had met his death. Rumor spread fast of a crime most violent, strangling the Creator to his dying breath. On the line, suddenly, spoke an imposing voice. The prophecy fulfilled? From death does God now rise? In truth, it was the devil. All listened without choice. There is no God in heaven, fools! Don't you realize? Lucifer is my name. To me you've been succumbing. I'd have told you long ago, but I thought it unbecoming. So, that's here's another Luciferian rhyme for you.
Fine.
Yeah. Circus tricks take talent, so I've been told. I introduce to you the incomparable Lucifer, the great genius dog of mental tricks so bold. Circus life is hard. His owner was a glue sniffer. Lucifer performed psychic arts of prophecy. His canine mind was remarkably imposing. The show must go on, always his philosophy. Poems and operas he also was composing. His owner sniffed that glue to the brink of death. Lucifer didn't wait. He jumped right on the phone. Emergency! My owner can scarcely take a breath. Back from the hospital, the man threw his dog a bone. He had the greatest memory, yet Lucifer was faithful. But his drug-addicted owner was never truly grateful. So those are two sides of the Archangel Lucifer. Was he an archangel, or is he considered some other rank?
Lucifer? He was an archangel.
He was an archangel. So God, Jehovah, really took it personally when Lucifer rebelled.
Well, he was in heaven. His job was the covering cherub. He was supposed to be over the throne of God. And, you know, that in a sense is being elevated higher than God there. If he's on top of God, then that means he's physically higher, wouldn't you say?
I guess.
But, of course, he and his incredibly powerful legions were overwhelmed by the irresistible force of God.
The irresistible force of God?
Yes, like a bug on the windshield of a car traveling at 60 miles an hour. I mean, the
power. Which was traveling 60 miles an hour, the bug or the car?
The car, but it doesn't make any difference. The impact is significant.
Right. Well, food of the gods, the food of the irresistible gods, the bugs get very large, so the impact could be very, very significant when you're traveling.
I like that novel. I think it would be an interesting film, don't you?
Well, they made a film of Food of the Gods.
Oh, they made a horrible Burt I. Gordon piece of crap.
Really? I saw it when I was a little kid in the drive-in movie theater. I thought it was wonderful.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know, but I think I liked it. I mean, I'd have to watch it again. Some things that I liked as a child, as I encounter them again, I'm very pleased with my taste. In fact, most things that I liked as a child. I was a great fan of M.C. Escher, and I still like M.C. Escher.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think that I had the right instinct, and I liked Klaus Oldenburg quite a bit when I was a kid, and I still like Klaus Oldenburg, so, you know, my artistic tastes haven't really changed, and I kind of marvel at people whose political affiliations change, because mine have not really changed. I still don't like racists and power mongers and war mongers and corrupt politicians and big exploitive corporations and all those sort of things. I like them as a kid, and now I don't like them as an adult, and it confuses me to see others who somehow drift into these strange, how shall we say, cul-de-sacs of logic, into these or cul-de-sacs of illogic, wherein bizarre fallacies, warped funhouse mirror ideals, somehow things that I once thought were the province of outside intellectuals, kind of conspiracy theorists and things, now are these kind of QAnon right-wing things. Like, who's this guy, Joe Rogan? I mean, it seems like he should have been on the good side of things, but it seems like he's some kind of, well, malevolent creep. You know? I kind of got onto a digression. And
no, it's so easy to be a maudlin creep. So there you go.
Yeah, well, a magnificent piebald is the expression that that Winston Churchill applied to Joseph Chamberlain, referring to Joseph Chamberlain's change in political affiliation. He went from Tory to Whig and then back to Tory again. And whereas I guess Churchill didn't make such perambulations, politically speaking. But Churchill, as I understand it, could drink an enormous amount, and he did. And I read about a couple of bold scientific explorers, or political scientific explorers, as the case may be, who endeavored to emulate Churchill's daily alcohol intake. And, oh, I think his breakfast started with champagne mimosas, and there were...
Well, is this really true, or is it part of the legend, the carefully cultivated legend?
I'm not sure. You know, who can... Who can be sure? But presumably there was a record of what Churchill ate and drank, and there was especially a large amount that he drank, as I understand it. And the marvel, what I kind of tend to think about it, is that it's like this. When I was in Myanmar and was exploring the Nat Pwe rituals of animism in Mandalay, there was a drinking god there named Umanjo, and he's a kind of horseman, and he is a wacky character with all sorts of stories behind him, and he drank a lot, and there would be these ceremonies where the shaman, the transvestite shaman known as Nat Kada, who are the wives of the Nat spirits, those 37 sort of pseudo-historical figures of legend that predate Buddhism in Burma, shall I say. There's this drinking god, right? And so you go into a ceremony of Umanjo, their drinking god, and they say that if the god is truly present, then he will drink all the alcohol from your belly. And I actually had this experience. I was asked by a Burmese shaman to not just take a sip of beer, but to drink an entire liter full of Mandalay beer. And I was on an empty stomach, had been wandering around this festival out in the dust for an entire day without eating or drinking or anything. And I had this liter of beer, and I felt no intoxication whatsoever because Umanjo, the god, was present. The god was there with us to drink the alcohol, right, out of my belly. Well, similarly, perhaps many artists and politicians and leaders and all different types of people who are somehow inspired, who are have something in them that is great, the gods drink the alcohol or the drug or whatever poison it is that they like to take right out of their system. So this is why, say, certain... give me an example of... I mean, Billie Holiday took a lot of heroin, for example, I think.
Well, of course, the response to this would be, but think how much they could have done if they weren't doing the drugs and alcohol.
Oh, well, think about how little they might have done if they weren't taking the drugs and alcohol.
Well, there's, I mean, of course, that also.
Ovid says there is no poetry among water drinkers. Have you heard that expression before?
Pretty good. No, I never heard that.
Yeah, well, that's a quote that I know of from Ovid, and I think that in the ancient times, the definition of wine was more expanded. In fact, I think it was like, what is the German Purity Act, which sounds like some sort of Nazi thing, but actually it was a drug law, I think, that was perhaps the first drug law instituted in Germany in, I think, like the early 16th century, like maybe 1506 or 1509, I forget, but... the main point was that the law was there to prohibit mixing other types of herbs, specifically nightshades like henbane and belladonna, into wine and beer. So they call it the German Purity Act. But I think in ancient times, you know, I mean, the
is that because of absinthe that mixtures were tried?
Absinthe is much later, but absinthe is an example of an alcohol with a different, you know, psychoactive wormwood. What is the active alkaloid in wormwood? I forget.
Don't know.
Yeah, well, I forget too. So, but I know it's wormwood, and there is a specific
yes.
There might be Thujones actually that's in wormwood, but maybe I'm confusing that. I'm sure that many of the listeners here are madly scribbling away the psychobotanical secrets of wormwood and Artemisia absinthia, I believe, is what the wormwood plant is by its scientific name. Well, anyway, yeah, it has, I believe, Thujones, but it doesn't matter what you call it.
What are the psychoactive effects?
I don't know, because I don't drink absinthe, and despite rumors to the contrary, I don't do all sorts of drugs. I do certain ones,
surely,
but not all of them.
Were you accused of being
drug-addled?
Yes,
I've been accused of being very drug-addled, but I may be addled by certain drugs, but not all of them, and certain ones maybe I might try, but I still never have. So, and certain ones I just do not do. I do not take marijuana. I cannot abide with it.
Ah, well, yeah. I stopped. I put mine away.
But I think though that if the inspiration is flowing, whatever the type of inspiration it is, that the drugs are not a obstacle to that. They might not even harm you. They might do you very little harm as long as you are walking right with the Lord, so to speak. And so, you know. So let's see. Crawling on our naked bellies, we proud bootlickers who demean ourselves to live our mighty dreams, we'd be nobler and happier as Eden's fruit pickers instead of debasing ourselves for stupid schemes. Across the green grass and the sparkling streams, the legendary hooded holy man levitates alone, and viewed from a healthy distance, it really seems that he gnaws the bits of flesh from a human bone of some unlucky cannibal who is heard to groan, "All for one are doomed! Death to human culture!" The wretches' whispered curses do solemnly intone the will of the extraterrestrial karmic vulture, encircling with gently tilted wing the sinking log of logic whereupon we crawl while thinking.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. So what else is on tonight's agenda, Hal?
Well, I don't know. I'll probably close her up at the top of the hour and wend my way homeward.
Are you not wending your way to a youthful cartoonist hootenanny?
No, not this night, but I will be when my schedule is put back together.
Do they addle pate themselves in their cartoonist schadenfreude?
They may be listening right now, and
well, they might be taking offense to my
well,
satirical...
you are curious, and it's interesting. Well, you know, how are you going to describe the work of a group of people that they're dedicated? They're producing some interesting stuff, and it's going to see publication, and so
you know. But there are many scurrilous rumors that accompany the careers of underground cartoonists. You know that.
And so do they. They know quite a lot about comics, even obscure ones that I didn't know anything about.
Oh. Do you know who George Carlton is? Wait, I think it's Carlton, maybe. It's not Carlton, but Carlton. I have a book.
What did he draw?
I have the book called The Smithsonian Book of... Oh. I guess it's comic book comics, but it was early comic book from the 1940s, and it's very, very surreal. I'll have to show it to you.
1940s aren't that early in the history of comics. But.
Well, all right. But I think that comic books were starting to come out in the 1940s, and
well,
there were newspaper
exactly.
comics earlier than that.
They had the idea of binding together bound collections of strips from Sunday newspaper comics, which were the lineal precursors of comics.
Well, okay. So that's what I always thought, is the newspaper comics came before actual comic books.
Well, the newspaper comics were magnificent. They were, the comic book section was huge and thick, and it spread out over a large space once you unfolded it. You know, and the graphic richness was great. The cartoonists that were collected by Hearst and used in Hearst publications. And they had people like Winsor McCay, and, you know, they always had great auteurs, newspaper comics. I would count Hal Foster in there, certainly Milton Caniff, is that how you say his name? For a while before he disgraced himself, of course, Al Capp had a great thing going with Lil Abner.
How did he disgrace himself? I like Pogo personally.
Walt Kelly was pretty damn good, beautiful drawing.
Yes, beautiful drawings and funny stories too.
Yes, that's right.
Hold on. I'm trying to look this up because I think I have the name wrong. That's terrible. I should remember everything.
Well, you're speaking of a cartoonist or a comic book artist?
I'm speaking of a cartoonist that I really like, but I like earlier this evening, I could not remember the Zechariah Sitchin books, even though I have... well, I have listened to them as audiobooks, which probably contributes to my faulty memory, actually. But I've listened to these audiobooks over and over again. And they have so much detail in them, these Zechariah Sitchin books. Whether these details are accurate or not is way beyond my level of scholarship. I can't comment on whether Zechariah Sitchin's theories are correct or not. I think that orthodox, shall we say, when we refer to scholars of antiquity, do we call them orthodox or do we call them mainstream or pro, what do you call that?
It depends on where you stand. There were Jewish scholars of antiquity who would fall into the category of orthodox at the present time or be the most similar to it. Flavius Josephus, other writers.
Yeah, I'm still trying to look this up. He did a something called like the soft boiled. He wrote a comic strip or called the soft boiled fireman's button, I think. So I'm trying to search for that. Yeah. Yeah, this is not easy. This is not easy. I am desperately searching for this comic book. And
but you are doing so in tranquility.
No, I am doing it in tranquility, but I have finally located the name of the comic book. It was called Jingle Jangle Tales. Are you familiar with that?
What, was it in England or something? Or was it?
I believe it was an American comic book.
In the Tales. 50s or earlier?
I think earlier than that. I think in the 30s or 40s. And I believe that... so I'm looking it up now. It was a ten. Here, I'm gathering information. Okay. My memory did serve me right. George L. Carlson was the author of the Jingle Jingle Tales. That was the name of the cartoonist.
Okay. And were they animal characters?
Jingle Jingle Comics was a 10-cent bi-monthly, 42-issue, 68-page, later reduced to 52-page, children's-oriented American comic book magazine published by Eastern Color under the Famous Funnies Incorporated imprint between February 1942 and December 1949. The series featured mixes of human and cartoon animal material. The series was edited by Stephen Douglas
with George L. Carlson as the principal artist.
Yes, but the thing that distinguishes Jingle Jangle Tales is how surreal and bizarre the images and the setups and the storyline is.
How about the character?
Well, it's just nonsensical. I don't want to say there's no rhyme or reason, but the absurdity runs high. But yet the craftsmanship, the drawings are excellent, and the wit seems, though highly absurd, seems not thoughtless, but rather meditated. Okay, I am going to look for an image that all of the listeners are going to appreciate very much. They're going to
hear this image.
Well, I am going to show you an image from Jingle Jangle Tales somehow.
Oh. Did you migrate there from reading the pulp science fiction magazines?
No, I've been aware of Jingle Jangle Tales for a long time.
Were you exposed to them as a young person?
No, I found it in a book that I have, which is a collection of Smithsonian early comic book comics. It's a Smithsonian publication showing these showing the best of early comics, and I guess. Maybe you don't think 1942 to 49 is early, but my impression is that that mostly comics were in newspaper comics previous to the 40s, and that long form storytelling wasn't done so much in comics, but rather was written out, and the pulps kind of occupied the position of the comics, but then the comics took over with illustrations, and the pulps went out of style. So here we have a story called The Pint-Sized King and the Three Jelly Beans, and you can see, the listeners can see, that the king is very small and it looks something like a teapot.
Are these tiny characters?
Well, the jelly beans are certainly tiny. They are sort of pickle-like shape.
And they're actually jelly beans?
Well, their bottom half is jelly beanish because each has a different color, as though they were wearing a kind of tight leotard or something. And they're green, they're red, and blue. And the king is bald and has a small crown on his head and a quizzical kind of Ready Kilowatt kind of face, and I'm sure everybody knows the Ready Kilowatt reference.
Yes, we all remember him.
And indeed, does Ready Kilowatt still preside over the Midwest as an advertising icon?
I don't know. Maybe there some Ready Kilowatts too large to have removed are
still
there.
I'm going to let you look at this illustration here for a second.
All right.
Yeah, you can try to describe it to the listeners who are doubtless just pining away for more information about the
pint-sized. Oh, interesting cartooning style. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a great page.
I think so. I mean, I like it.
The pint-sized king and the three jelly beans. Yes, he's pint-sized because he's a part teapot,
he's part teapot. Yeah, he's a pint-sized teapot.
One pint.
That is one thing I remember about Jingle Jangle Tales is that a lot of inanimate objects are anthropomorphized. So there's a lot of, you know, of characters who are part household object and part, in this case, nobility. A very pint-sized king. Are we having a little bit of zither? Or is this a zither, or is this a...
It's a guitar.
Oh.
Well, played by Robbie Basho.
Why can't we hear a little bit of zither music about now, Hal?
Well, the zitherian breezes may not be blowing in our direction.
The zither goes whither it will.
Whither the zither goes.
Goes yonder and zonder. Okay, here's another Jingle Jangle comics. They were 10 cents only back in August of 1942. This one doesn't have a title story, but we see a very peppy looking young boy under an umbrella, under a storm, with an indeterminate green friend.
Well, I wonder how the first one resolved with the messengers that the king sent out, what they brought him back. His desire was to expand his kingdom, which he felt was too small, and containing him and keeping him at a small size.
Well, maybe. Well, here, this is a pretty good page as well. It shows a unicorn skipping rope under the moon. The Moonstruck Unicorn.
I didn't know they could do that.
Yes, this is called The Moonstruck Unicorn and the Worn Out Shadow. That's a very nice title. Because when unicorns in uniforms wear out their shadows... All right, once upon a time...
They shouldn't wear uniforms.
But unicorns do wear uniforms. Once upon a time... I can't really read this. They really... It's shameful.
I've noticed that the words that kind of have faded on those pages.
Well, they've reproduced these comic pages at a very low resolution. Somebody at Google should be fired for this.
But also the black. Well, maybe they weren't interested in taking up the file space, so the comics are still being disrespected.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a policy at Google that if nobody is reading a specific comic book, and I don't think many people are reading Jingle Jangle Tales these days, which is sad, then Google... deprecates it. That's the 2.0 word, deprecation. And deprecating the Jingle Jangle Tales and not allowing them to be enjoyed in their full high resolution glory as they should be. But this is definitely an interesting illustration here. Looks like children are taking a bath with what might be an extraterrestrial. Definitely might be a little green.
Good Lord, what do kids get up to?
Yeah, and they're what they're doing is they're not taking a bath. It's Halloween, and they have gotten into the apple bobbing tub, and one little girl has taken off her clown mask, and she's looking...
Clown mask.
Uh-huh, and she's kneeling before the bobbing tub. And she looks like she's very eagerly and almost obediently looking on as this self-indulgent boy has caught an apple in his teeth, while the little green or gray from Zeta Reticuli, you know... I'm sure you've read about, or maybe you know more about it, just reading about how fairy tales, with the incidents of the fairies taking children and returning
yes.
changelings to the doorstep.
Yes.
That this is a Oh, like an earlier version of the abduction tales that we hear today.
Yes. And you end up with, an elf child instead of your child.
Right.
Who's been raised by you, but maybe a sleeper, ready to go into action.
You mean like a Russian sleeper?
In a way, for the elf kingdom instead of humans, if put into action.
Why don't you take a look at this Jingle Jangles cover from, I'm not sure if it's 1942 or 44 or when it's from, but they were doing this stuff around.
Now, that does have a sort of 40s look.
Yeah.
In fact, I see the signature down here, but it's not.
It's
very
George Carlson is the comic book illustrator.
It doesn't look like it says that, but that's because the fidelity is so poor.
It's terrible what they're doing with Google these days, isn't
it? Well, at least there's some record of it, and it could be restored. The big blog of kids' comics.
Oh, is there a blog of children's comics?
Jingle Jangle Tales, Alabama and His 40 Fleas. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Is that like...
God, all this effort.
All this effort for what?
To create these stories.
Yeah.
And what's this? A Netflix film?
I don't know. They're including stuff that it's clearly an advertisement. They're just, you put in a search word and you
all right, this has to be during the World War II.
Well, it is from World War II.
Because he's handing a ration card over at the gas station.
Yeah.
Of fairy tale land.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just fairy tale reality for you, handing over your ration card at the gas
station.
Well,
fairy tale land is at war, too. Yeah. We're all in this together.
This is... Right. Well, this is... This seems to me to have about not much less regard for the sanctity of fairy tales than an R. Crumb comic strip. I mean, handing the ration card over, like, what a wonderful childhood experience. Here I am. It's a curfew on.
It's what the grown-ups do, and the child wants to be a grown-up.
Oh, what a terrible mistake. A confused child.
Well, today everyone wants to be a teenager. Nobody wants to be a grown-up, unless you're basically a child who is not grown up, like me, because I always want to be a grown-up.
I'm confused already.
The child wishes to be a grown-up. The child doesn't wish to be Robin. The child wishes to be Batman, as Jules Pfeiffer pointed out. The child is small and lacks power, and the adult is all-powerful.
Well, how many children wish to be Richard III?
Well, you have a broad spectrum of children. There might be a few out that did. But
okay.
The deal is that the...
I have a poem now about children. Will you indulge me one more time, Hal?
Certainly.
Okay. This is a poem about... This is the... we're coming right up on it. Here we are. At once, all the world's children open countless eyes to dream, gaze upward, and travel beyond the earth. All their young thoughts reflect like stars in the skies. Oh, the heavens celebrate each child's special worth. Infantile joy invokes the curious mind primeval, inviting the innocent to wonder and to think of a shared destiny, man's ultimate retrieval from the mad destruction at extinction's brink. Compassion shall prevail, and never shall we vanish. Please forgive how our ancestors were once hunted by dinosaurs in lost eons before we grew mannish. Alas, we evolved while the predators were stunted. It's long been said that only the sweet shall survive, Will our future be demolished by the past we contrive? So, you know,
this is interesting question.
Well, what are they playing next to us?
This is what I'm constantly contending with, the thin walls and the loud music coming through them, right, which is picked up by the microphones here.
How about the cat who walked through walls? Do you know this story?
Was that a Robert Heinlein story?
It is a Robert Heinlein story. You know, I read A Stranger in a Strange Land, and I thought it was just a fabulous book. And ever since then, I have tried to pick up Robert Heinlein books of different titles, and I cannot get through them. I just can't deal with it. I don't understand. Is he a one-hit wonder, or are there certain Heinlein books that I should be reading?
Well, he grew more conservative in his later years, but he had an ingenious mind. You can overdose on him because his viewpoint, his political viewpoint, is unchanging. But he thought of some good stuff. A lot of science fiction writers were inclined more toward the right than to the left. And I remember when, I think it was the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction during the Vietnam War, published all the science fiction authors and people in the science fiction world who were against the war in alphabetical order, and then there were all the science fiction authors who were for the war. So naturally Heinlein was for the war. Lester Del Rey, you know, lots of people. But on the other side, there were more. Starting alphabetically with Forrest J. Ackerman.
Well, was Ackerman opposed to the Vietnam War?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's a good thing to be opposed to, I think. And what about? Wait a second. Harlan Ellison.
Yes, I'm sure he was there.
Well, was he opposed or?
He was opposed.
Oh, okay. So I think that I read Radio Free Albemuth by Philip K. Dick not long ago.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it is good, actually. And prescient, because Ferris Fremont is the Russian sleeper president. He's a right-wing dictator.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking control of America. And it seems like a premonition of Donald Trump, who... Is not Donald Trump a Russian sleeper? I mean, isn't that it? Don't they have compromise on him?
He is a useful idiot in their terms. Yes.
Useful idiot. That is a Russian expression translated to English, isn't it?
That is Putin's view of Trump.
Oh, well, so... Oh, my. How does that go?
Did you see the pictures of them toasting themselves when Trump was elected the first time? Moscow was delighted. They were drinking champagne.
I don't know if I saw that in particular.
I remember that photo.
Right? Yeah. Now, this is some Delta blues that we're listening to, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Is this like Lonnie Jones? What am I thinking, Lonnie?
I think it's Blind Willie McTell, but I better check and see.
Yeah. Did you see the movie? It was a vampire movie set in Clarksdale, Mississippi. It's a black drama, black leading characters. It concerns a
Blind Willie McTell is the,
yeah, it concerns the a
guitar player and singer.
Yeah, it concerns a guitar player in Mississippi, and a couple of black gangsters who've just come back from Chicago, and they've got a bunch of money, and they want to open up a juke joint. But lo and behold, zombie vampires I see all them.
Boy, if it isn't one thing, it's another.
I know. You think they had enough trouble with Jim Crow laws and the Ku Klux Klan and poverty and everything else. And then they got vampires to contend with. It's just, you know, ruining their party. What's the name of this film? You must know. I already forget. I just, you know.
Well, now, which film?
I got a memory like Swiss cheese, to be honest.
It depends on what you prioritize.
So.
I can't remember everything.
You remember more than most, Hal. That's for sure. But here's a song about oblivion. How about this? I'm going to do one more. And tell me what you think of this, Hal. Let's do a different tone of voice. Listen to the words of the song of oblivion. Succumbing to death, oblivion's waterfall. We whisper nature's secrets, oddly quotidian. We, the river that flows to the sea after all. From the sea we rise to dance our bones. To the oceanic voice we must hark. We follow the tune of necromantic tones. Ghostly hearts pounding waves in the dark. Death takes from life all its many meanings to give universal words to the silent song. Saga of the forgotten and all unseen things. River beyond knowing, as long as time is long. Oblivion does not exist. It is merely a metaphor. A tombstone you'll return to and have been long before.
So, well, out of it you come, and into it you will go.
So this is ABC, that's CBS, that's NBC.
That's right. I am taking over.
All the major networks are following this incredible political action.
Yeah, and RTV, my favorite network.
Right, yes.
Yes, these days the FCC, if they hear that you
the
are
FCC.
Watching... The FCC. Yes, the FCC. That's right.
Cracking down on .fm website.
And the AKC.
Man, I don't want no FCC on
well,
me.
Well, there's the American Kennel Club as well, and they're cracking down right and left.
Throw a dog a bone.
Well,
what about
Nick
the KFC?
Paddywhack.
KFC, right. Well, now there's this new rival in town, Crispy Crunchy Chicken.
Crispy.
24th Street and...
KFD is Crispy
what
Fried...
What Frickin' Chicken?
Frickin' Chicken. I've been to California Chicken.
They were in that alliance, you know, when Chicken tried to get all of those merchants and stores into a group, and Good
really?
Frickin' Chicken was one of them.
Yeah. But then he said nigger and everything went south.
Oh, no, this was a long time before that, and please do not say that on my show.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about the FCC.
I'll
but
get
there's
canceled.
The,
you won't get canceled.
The feces here. Yeah, well, I don't know. I suppose one should be free to say anything. I would
it's like when
that.
You do an autopsy on a naked supermodel, you know, you can't help but masturbate
oh, yes,
to it.
I guess.
Well, it depends. She'd have to be pretty hot to be dead and yet sexually attractive.
Ed Gein had lower standards.
You know, went to there.
What slavering necrophilia is this? You know,
slavering necrophilia.
The world of ghouls and others who don't obey the rules.
Yeah, the world of ghouls and others who don't obey the rules. Ed Gein was a gentleman very fine.
He wasn't a gynecologist, though.
He was a lampshade maker.
Yes. Yes, yes.
He was a craftsman.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure.
You could. I mean, people did. I went to the Museum of Death in New Orleans when I was there.
Oh.
And I
saw... You lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way when I came out of there. It was a grisly experience.
As in a grizzly bear?
As in gristle, as in seeing the remains of murder victims and all sorts of things.
Did they have, like, human body parts and jars and things?
They've got skeletons, but they've got lots of pictures, lots of newspaper and police files.
I used to really be fond of delving into all that stuff when I was younger.
Well, there was a reason I was bringing up the Museum of Death. What were you talking about just before I did?
I was talking about the wigwam of death.
Oh, no, you weren't.
Oh, yes, I was.
The wigwam of death?
Yes, the wigwam of death. That's...
I'll never remember the connection now.
Yeah, well...
This wigwam just recently entered.
I was bidding on a pulp magazine that depicted two white tourists in a pot being boiled with the local infuriated natives.
And the wigwam of death was in the background?
Well, I think that whoever was selling this, he told me, I'm so sorry, but I just can't find this. I can't send it to you. I think that what happened is that after he actually fished out this old magazine that I was ordering, mm-hmm. he saw, wait a second. No, I can't sell this. This is just too good. Like, I think that's what really happened.
Don't get canceled or anything.
Well, he canceled my order, you know, and kept returning me my money. But
cancel my Rumba lesson.
Yeah, but I did not get the you know, the Zumba. Zumba.
No, Zumba.
So is that the thing that, like, cleans up your, like, rugs?
No, that's the Roomba.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, but also the pulp jungle stories, though. We were talking about Jingle Jangle, but now we're moving on to the jungle.
Like Raymar of the Jungle?
Even less
Kigar. Politically correct.
I think it's Kigar.
Bomba the Jungle Boy.
Well, I don't
horrible
know.
Bunch of racist books. Yeah. But Kigar? You don't mean like Kazar?
No.
Kona, like Monarch Kigar. Of Monster Isle? How's about Kazar?
Kazar was a Marvel, right?
Yeah, Kazar is a Marvel, a muscle guy living in the jungle with the dinosaurs. And there also was Kona, Monarch of Monster Isle. Also was...
Kigor. And the curious thing is that...
I never heard of Kigor.
Well, here is a Kigor Jungle Stories cover.
Let me see him. Oh, wow. What's her phone number?
The Kigor Jungle Stories women.
Kigor, the jungle lord, is in the remote background, and this babe and the gorilla are in the foreground.
Yes, and the babe is always wearing a
form-fitting leopard bikini.
Yes, but it's a very characteristic.
There was a girl next door.
And if she has a cohort, a
fangs of Umkulu.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Kigor, Jungle Lord, is coming to the rescue in the background. He's brachiating on a vine, and he's got a knife between his teeth, so he'll take that gorilla. The gorilla's got her tied up, or...
Oh, yeah. There's usually the women are tied up in Jungle Stories.
By a gorilla?
Well, gorillas do have their own Boy Scouts, and there's, you know, there's Gorilla Scouts. Were you a Gorilla Scout?
No, but I knew I found a reference to the Gorilla Police recently. A comic book panel that says, then comes the Gorilla Police, and there they are on motorcycles.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Well, the Gorilla Police, that's a motorcycle gang, right?
It was in this comic book, like somebody made it up, but the fact that that happened doesn't mean it didn't exist somehow or somewhere.
I do have at least one Jungle Stories in my little
Everything
collection.
Which is yeah. possible to be believed is an image of truth, William Blake.
Oh. Well, look at this. Here's another Jungle Stories cover for you.
This time the babe is being menaced by an enormous lion. A male lion leaping with his claws extended, and she's tied up again, tied up in that suit that might be painted on. And the hero is coming from the top right corner, and he's even got one hand in the lion's mane at this point. And he's got a knife. He's going to try to kill a lion with a knife like Tarzan. Yeah, Tarzan did manage to do that on a few occasions. But nobody else could. A lion is so incredibly strong.
Yeah.
One just doesn't have the concept of what they can do, how strong they are.
I suppose that is, they are pretty strong.
They're incredibly strong. Yeah. If you're standing by the lion cage and they reach through and they get you with their claw, they'll pull you through the bars of the cage, which are like, 6 inches apart.
Okay, well, so
What is stronger, a lion or a lion goddess?
A lion is all muscle. But, of course, the lioness is the one you really want to watch out for, because that's the one that does all the hunting and all the work.
Oh, well, here we are. Here's a...
The males just lie around.
It seems to me like there's a leopardess here.
Oh, yes. Well, let's see that. She's got a leopard-type bikini on. Before the word bikini was invented. Wow, it almost looks like... No, it's the same. It's the skin of the leopard as shown in this pattern up here from the leopard descending in... And she's tied. Yes, she's... Her wrists are tied to a pole. A sacrifice. And there are skulls in the foreground. Kigar, Jungle Lord, in the seven silver skulls of Lagonda.
Well, that's a good title. Maybe that's what you should read next
Novelette
time.
By Emmett McDowell, Corral of Talking Apes.
Are you familiar with the work of Emmett McDowell?
Not really.